Hey everybody, it's Michelle Fisher and welcome into A View From My Window. As always, I thank you for joining us today. Today I'm talking with Brandy Weatherald and her son Caden about the difficult journey they have experienced through Caden's high school special education program and what proactive steps they believe schools and families can take to achieve positive outcomes and avoid unnecessary conflict. Brandy, Caden, it's nice to see you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
You are so very welcome.
So, Brandy, let's talk about the challenges a little bit for Caden because of his disability, but also talk about the positives about Caden. And Caden, of course, you can chime in whenever you want to, okay?
Yes.
So I'll start with the positives.
Please do.
He is, I will say, one of the kindest, empathetic individuals I know, especially as a teenager. He really loves to help other people, and social justice is one of the things that's also really important to him. And those positives actually play into the challenges that he faces because he is verbal and higher functioning, if you will. That kind of leaves expectations don't match up necessarily with his needs, and people lack understanding because of that a lot of times.
Caden, I mean, talk about that. Why? I mean, yeah, people say, oh, he looks great, but you do have needs. Talk about, what do you feel about that when people misinterpret you?
Well, I feel like I don't really like the term high functioning, because you can be high functioning, so to, per se, on certain things like speaking, like speech, or like whatever the case may be. But I'm also very... I'm also lower functioning on certain things as of social skills and just pretty much anything that has to do with like getting up and speaking. But I've actually tried to overcome that over the past couple of weeks and months.
That is wonderful. We talk about his challenges in high school. Mm-hmm. He was taught in a general education classroom with some resource support, but that changed when he began high school in kind of a sad sort of a way. Talk about that and how that change impacted both of you, really.
Okay. He was in the general education setting all the way through his eighth grade year. He did have some resource time and he had some extra supports built in, things like that. At the end of his eighth grade year, they decided going into the high school, because it was so large, let's put him into this one program. And the way it was sold to me at the time, and I say sold for a reason, because I thought he was going to be in there with other kids with developmental disabilities or even intellectual disabilities. I knew it wasn't their life skills program, but I wasn't aware that it was an emotional disability program and what he would end up being exposed to. And so being in that type of environment poses a bigger problem with maybe picking up on some behaviors, that there was no transitioning. It was, you go from general education setting and interacting with everybody into a very secluded program that has you set apart from everybody else.
And I mean, to me, when I read the article, when you were in front of the State House, to me, was he before high school, were the teachers picking up on his behaviors and his needs before?
Yes.
So it would seem to me that this is not, it's a no-brainer to be, you know what I mean?
Right. No, I 100% agree. I mean, we had some challenges. I mean, there were some things that we had to educate people along the way, but it was always done in a very constructive, non-adversarial way. You know, they came to the table and they met, and we had his team of people, if you will, that we would come together and we would meet and we would talk about his needs. But once he entered the high school, it was not that way.
You mentioned at the State House a specific incident that escalated him into actually being arrested mm-hmm. at the school. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that? Mm-hmm. And how that could actually be avoided, arrested at the school?
Yes. Well, there was four times his freshman year between September and February. He was actually arrested four times at school. Mm-hmm. And that's including handcuffs on you. The one time that I had referred to at the State House, when they had then weeded him into their intense behavior support program, he was in a very small room, kind of like a closet type size room with another adult. Mm-mm. And he panicked. Mm-hmm. He had been in there all day. He wanted out. His anxiety ramped up. He wanted to get out of the room. So he was going to pull the door open, and there was a female instructional assistant on the other side of the door holding it shut. And you can only imagine the panic that sets in, and he just pulls it harder and harder. And apparently she had injured her arm and had to go get medical attention. But when I received the phone call from the school that day, I was told about the incident from the assistant principal, from one of the assistant principals. And it was, everything's okay. He wasn't, you know, he didn't go after anybody. He didn't try to hurt anybody. Just come over, pick him up. You know, we'll bring him out to the car. But I went and sat and was out there for like 15 minutes. And then when I went in, I was met by a police officer. And they had him in the room where the police officers are. And I was told then that he had been arrested for battery on the teacher.
What was going through my head around that time was I was like panic attack, like freaking out because I thought they had the door locked. I didn't know that somebody was holding the door. I just basically went into like this horrible, just not mind state, but like panic. And it scared me. Like I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was going to happen. Whenever she got hurt, They called the police down from their office in the school, and I got forcefully put in handcuffs without resisting, and my head was like against a wall, my body was on the ground, and then they put the knee in my back and put handcuffs on me.
Mm-hmm. But then that incident eventually led to the school to recommend a residential placement for Caden.
Yes.
Can you share with me why neither you along with the residential provider believe that that was an appropriate option, the steps you took to seek an alternative program, and what's resulted since mm-hmm. then?
Yeah, so that was kind of like the beginning of the downward spiral, because one of the things that they need to understand that I don't think that they do understand in the school is when you begin restraining and or secluding students, there's a lot of trauma that comes along with it. And so sometimes the way that they react actually increases behavior. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that's really truly understood how that affects them. So over the next, it was probably a year and a half, we was kind of weeding through the school system and trying to find the right placement and figure out, you know, what that looked like for him to get his diploma. Mm-hmm. And he was at a private placement at a private school that only served kids with autism. But the school system was kind of putting a wrench into that working. I didn't know that at the time. It wasn't until we went through our due process that I found some of those things out, because we got emails and things like that. But they did recommend the residential placement. I was told that that was the only option. And they wrote that in his IEP. So there were two choices. I could either withdraw him from school mm-hmm. and he sits at home, or I could seek out representation and file the due process. I had spoke to all of his providers. I had shared that with the school that they did not feel that a residential setting was appropriate. He was well maintained in the community and at home. He had a job. He was successful at church. He wasn't a residential kiddo. But I did make the mistake of saying at our meeting if I would, I made the mistake of saying that I would withdraw him from school before he would go to residential. And I had believed what was happening since he entered high school was trying to weed us out. And I think that that's how we got to where we got to. Does that?
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you were saying Caden has a place in the community, mm-hmm. I mean, that has to resonate with a lot of parents with mm-hmm. sons and daughters with disabilities, because I wouldn't want to be in a residential program. I would want to be where I'm comfortable. Is that true for you, Caden? I mean,
yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, imagine them writing up and it's a place, like they picked a place.
Right.
So they put that. As a mom, I had no idea where this place was. I'd never been to this place. And you want me to sign a paper saying that when a bed opens up, that's where I'm sending my child to. Mm-hmm. That was, to me, that was just unfathomable that they would put that in his IEP.
Your testimony at the State House urging legislators to provide more resources to school included training for mm-hmm. schools and teachers. Talk about that. What type of training would help? What sorts of things do teachers really need to know to not only teach the child, but also be a good influence on them, how they treat them?
Well, what's interesting is that I found that it wasn't normally the teachers that were the biggest culprits, if you will. I don't know if that's the right word, but it was normally administrators or the principals that lacked understanding. I felt that a lot of the teachers that he had had over the years were very good, mm-hmm. But it's what happens when there's a problem. So when I spoke at the State House about the training, kids are normally lumped into the general education setting or like life skill, like you think mm-hmm. of the life skills class. Mm-hmm. And those kids can have significant behaviors, but they don't face the same treatment as your higher functioning kids, if you will, like Caden did. I mean, they're not going to be arrested. Mm-hmm. So I think that they need to learn how to de-escalate. I think that they need to learn. They need to be educated about kids with autism, and it's a spectrum. So mm-hmm. just because a child is verbal doesn't mean that they can appropriately communicate their needs or wants or what's going on. It may come out in behaviors, even though they're very verbal. And I think that there's a lack of understanding. And with the rate of kids being diagnosed with developmental disabilities today, it's very important that they do that, because they have to figure out a way to serve those kids.
So let's talk about then what you want families to, both of you want families to know. I mean, families are going to listen to this mm-hmm. and say, oh, I've been there. Mm-hmm. Not in the same maybe situation, but I've been there. Mm-hmm. It's a fight to live life.
Right.
What do you want them to know?
I think that they should know that there's always light at the end of the tunnel. There's not always darkness forever. You can make your own happiness. And I'd also like to say two more things, which is that God does not waste our hurt, and that he gives his best warriors the biggest battles.
So I think it's important for families to believe that they are their child's best advocate. They have to trust their gut, because it is very intimidating when we are going in and sitting at an IEP conference and they have their team of people there. And sometimes it's us and 15 other people or 20 other people in that meeting. So it's very important to trust your gut, to always advocate for your child. You know what's best for your child, and know that there are options. There are resources out there. There are great advocates out there that are both volunteer advocates and paid advocates. But sometimes it goes far beyond that when there's rights being violated and ideas being violated, and you have to get an attorney. And that's accessible to parents. I think that a lot of times we get scared thinking, oh my gosh, I can't afford that. But there are options within that realm as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So again, you've been through it. Mm-hmm. You're still working on the emotional issues. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the future.
Okay.
What do you see?
Do you want to answer that first?
I actually wanted to add something on to what you said.
Okay.
Is that the thing I wanted to say, add on to hers, is you, like, us kids with special needs, I feel like this involves everybody. Like, everybody just needs to know that you make your own legacy, and you and our parents help build that legacy and help build that confidence in order for us to make that legacy possible.
Oh, and I love like, that.
And I feel like the parents need to stay in their ground and don't back down because you know what's right for your child. Yes. Nobody really else does.
Yes, and that's what you did, Brandy. You didn't say, oh, okay.
I wanted to quit, even after 2 weeks before a hearing, I wanted to...
Sure you did.
I was ready to quit.
But again, you said, you know, I know my child, and he's not going to be in a residential facility. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that that parents could learn from, is not to, even though you want to give up, never to give up.
Well, yeah, because sometimes they don't know that there's options. I can't tell you how many kids have been sent to residential by a school system. I mean, it's not unique. It happens more than we know. And that saddens me. That saddens me for the family, and that saddens me for that student. I mean, there are certainly times where residential is appropriate for someone. I mean, I know parents who have advocated to get their child into residential because there was a whole host of needs that needed to be managed, right, and figured out what's going on.
Sure.
But it was 6 months or a year of trying to get a child into residential. And then this is a bed that could have been used for somebody else that they were trying to put him into.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And not everyone has one size fits all.
That's right.
Lives, do
That's
they?
That's right. That's right.
Let's talk about the future.
Okay.
I mean, we've gone through the hard stuff, and you're still going through some hard things, but you've gotten on to the other side.
Right.
So let's talk about the sunshiny future.
Okay.
What do you feel?
He is a really good advocate, and what I hope for him, one, is to live a purposeful life and happy. And one of the things that I have found through all of it is that he has a gift about speaking, and he can get up there and advocate where a lot of kiddos with developmental disabilities can't. And so I think that that's really important. So I, whatever it is he does, I want him just to make sure that it's purposeful and he's doing something for those who need it.
And Caden, you've got mom behind you, so, and you've persevered through this situation. So what do you see as your future?
Well,
what do you want for yourself?
One day I want to open up a school for kids with special needs, and I want all the staff to be trained in ABA therapy and not using like holds as a discipline, but use it when it's needed. Because I know some ABA center that I've been to, they would use holds and put us in a so-called blue room, a little 5x10 room that's padded whenever we weren't listening. And I feel like that's definitely not okay. Like, I got PTSD from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so my whole goal is to build a school. I want to have ABA training for everybody, and for those kids who can't work even in a small classroom, I want it to be small classes, so it's not as much anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
I want for those kids who need one-on-one to have that one-on-one, to go into class, get that instruction from the teacher who's also trained in ABA, and I want them to be able to go out with an ABA therapist. And I want that to end up becoming a thing as I get older.
Because you want them to be able to participate.
Yeah.
And, you know, because there's lots of things that he misses.
And I even want us to have, it's actually a good point, in order for them, because I know sometimes us kids with special needs, we aren't able to participate in school sports. So I figured, why don't we have our own Special Olympics team?
There you go.
And I want to have this spread nationwide eventually.
There you go.
hopefully inspire other people.
Well, you know what? I interview a lot of people, but you guys have inspired me so very much. Well, Brandy and Caden, thank you so very much. And I wish you all the best in all your goals and endeavors. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for listening today, everybody. Have a great day today. Bye-bye.